Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today, we are continuing the discussion, we meaning Jürgen Kindler and Peter Mascher, and we're talking about, around, exploring a concept called cosmology. Like, what are the basic beliefs and fundamental principles that Reiki teaches us that we actually use to make decisions, not only in our private Reiki life, but also to extend Reiki out to the public or to new students as masters or to people who want to have treatments. So it's been a really stimulating conversation, and we're going to go right back into it now. So, Peter, I wanted to just acknowledge that it seems that the style of Reiki that you seem to be referring to, that evidently comes out of Japan, is quite different than the one that I'm used to teaching and the ones that I'm used to knowing about. So I just want to acknowledge that, and I can't go any further into this discussion without knowing what the substance is of those styles of teaching, and I don't feel like that's what we want to do right now. So I also want to acknowledge that I feel like that's something that I need to explore in another show, but I'd like to get back to the cosmology and just note that there maybe a difference in the cosmology of some of the Japanese styles that is different than ours.
Yes, I agree with you. Yeah? Yes, okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Good. So you said, Peter, that you had a couple of points that came up for you, and I'd love to explore them.
Mm.
Give us one.
Yeah, one of the aspects is that, for instance, we sometimes say, oh, I've got Reiki. Well, I have Reiki. And, I explored that for a while, and I said, I turn it around and I say, no, I don't have Reiki. Reiki has me.
Uh-huh.
And, I'm making this more and more a point in my own practice, and also when I teach other people. Because it offers a different kind of consciousness, a different kind of cosmology. As me, or many of us, or I say me now, have a tendency to incorporate teachings and energy into our own systems and make it part of our own personal patterns. And I see the real challenge of Reiki practice is to, when I practice Reiki, to open up to patterns in my life that I don't know yet, to open up to more mystic aspects of my life, to open up actually to the unknown. And so in the center for me is the aspect that Reiki as the energy can lead me through life in a beautiful intuitive way if I allow myself to open up to that pathway. So this is what I'd like to bring in right now, because it leads to a different kind of cosmology, I think. Does it make sense in a way? Is it understandable?
Possibly. okay, there are two possibilities for me and when it comes through me. One is that Reiki gives me entrance into the unknown of human existence. I call this mystery. And it doesn't mean that part of the mystery is not knowable. I do think that we have the capacity as human beings to grow our capability to embrace concepts and understandings of the universe that we wouldn't be able to, say, 20 years ago. So I believe that part of the mystery is knowable, and that there is a vast part of it that is unknowable, because that's part of the balance of knowing unknowing, right? That mm-hmm. we need to have as human beings. Mm-hmm. So is that what you're talking about?
Actually, I'm talking actually from that other point of view. I think there is still a separation between spiritual practice and life. In many spiritual practice, we find this. For instance, in Japanese Shintoism, there are these gates you walk through, and then there is a holy land, and before, it's not holy. And I see Reiki practice as a great gateway directly into life itself. And to experience the energy right between us, yeah, in every aspect that I can experience. For instance, in your voice when you talk, or in your thoughts that come across, or even in the picture that I see here on Skype of the two of you. And, well, Jürgen is in Reiki practice, holding the hands in front of his face. And so I think this is one of the most beautiful aspects of Reiki practice, not to create a separation between the unknown and the known. And of course, I agree, uh-huh. there is an unknown aspect, yeah, that we might never catch. But there are so many aspects that we can if we allow ourselves to open up to that world. And it's so fantastic, so amazing, that's right in front of our face. The most beautiful teachings I find come from touching another person, seeing another person, the exchange with another human being. And it goes probably much deeper than a journey on the mountain. And this is a deep part of Reiki practice for me. And it touches me while I speak about it. Because I would so much wish now to be able to see you in person and look into your eyes, and as there's a great wisdom coming from just sitting together and just feeling each other and seeing each other. So, yeah. Mm. I feel that right now with the two of you. Mm. The space is filled. Oh.
So I guess that it's partly filled with my wondering if I get your point. I mean, I really can follow what you're saying, but then I'm trying to translate it into my own, you know, my own experiences and relate to it, which I think is a very human thing, relate to it in my own world.
Right.
So can you give me an example, like, of what you're speaking about so I can pinpoint it more into my experience of Reiki?
Sometimes I say one of the most spiritual experiences is biting into a ripe apple. It's like picking an apple from a tree and biting into it and fully and truly enjoying that experience and being one with that apple and with the taste of it and how delicious it is and how much energy it gives me and just that enjoyment and abundance. Mm. And some people would say, perhaps, well, Peter, that's not spiritual. That's not holy. And of course, that could relate to, I think simply putting a hand on another person, simply giving another person Reiki is a profound spiritual experience. Can be. And to open my heart to that universe, that consciousness of experiencing that, that vast space that opens up when someone puts a hand on my body and I feel that person's heart and that person's love. That is so directly part of this world. It's not otherworldly in that sense.
Right.
So, does that help?
I mean, that helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, for me, there is this, like with everything, as children, I feel like we grow up with touch. And because it has so many social, I speak for myself, because it has so many social and connotation and emotional connotations, I ended up coming to Reiki from a family that didn't touch, basically. Touch was not one of their priorities. I knew that I was loved by my parents. I knew that they would not go away from me. I knew they took care of me. And I knew that they were there for me, you know, presence-wise. But I didn't get that through touch. And mostly the touch that I got as a child, I remember, and this is really important to underline, I remember as punitive, being punished, or out of anger, or something like that. And it's really interesting. It was very healing for me to come into Reiki and feel this human, I think an innate human desire for touch that is healing. And what I mean by healing is that it transmits an emotional it comes to emotion. An emotional transmission that goes far beyond words, and that becomes magical. It becomes transformative. It becomes nourishing. And, you know, I really believe in some way that that's why I can't lose weight, is because the touch that I'm used to being loved with is through food. So if so part of my idea about losing weight is to be able to give myself Reiki whenever I'm hungry and to see if that doesn't nourish that part of me that needs more food. Do you get what I'm saying? And am I on any kind of track that you're on?
Excuse me, I didn't get the last thing.
So am I on your track, Peter?
I very much relate to you. Yes.
And that you were talking about a cosmology point of that touch.
Yes, you see, sometimes when we talk about cosmology, it seems to be so much like a theory or something like out there.
No, it's based on experience.
Yeah, yes, that's why it touches me what you say. It is based on experience, and in the core essence, it's touch. And I very much agree with you. In my world, touch was manipulative. It didn't feel free. So when I, and also before I came to Reiki, I did lots of meditation practices. I was a Zen Buddhist for quite a while, and it felt cold to me. And actually I couldn't sit in silence. And it was pretty hard. And then after my first Reiki initiation with Yule, I remember I went home and I put my hands on my chest. First, I cried for minutes. Yeah. All this emotion came out. And then I sat in stillness and I said, oh, wow, I practiced so hard for many years and now I get it as a gift. It's so easy. It is so easy because it was initiated by touch and by love and by being cared for in a different way.
Yeah.
And that experience has never left me. It's just, it's something that I cherish and it's building my practice. Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautifully. Thank you for sharing that.
Mm.
Jürgen?
I'm totally with you. My pathway was different, but I see that Reiki has to do with touch in a safe way is really a gift. Yeah. So that's one part of the cosmology for me.
Uh-huh.
Unseen most of the times, I have to say.
Yes.
Yes, because I think, personally, that we get distracted when we talk about healing. So people like being channels. They don't, you know, their attention is, what is this energy doing in the other person? And I feel sometimes that we... I will say we, including myself, that I overlook the profundity of touch.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, that leads me to another maybe not seen aspect, and that is giving space, time and space. So it's, for me, if I give a Reiki treatment, it's not only that I touch people, but I also give them parts of my time and usually parts of the space, like my flat where I am, where I go to them and we share a room. And that kind of making space in my life, to have Reiki happening, which includes healing for most of the people, but sometimes it's only quote unquote an energetic experience. That is also something special. That's something that we do not do on our daily business. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And that's true for every level of Reiki. So it's true for a second degree and it's true for a master's degree as well.
Mm. Wow, Jürgen, it's a beautiful aspect. Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's creating space.
Yeah.
See, a big part of me is a musician. And when I hear sound, what happens to me is that this vast space opens inside of me and around me. And that happens since childhood. And I remember after first degree Reiki, and I've heard about, oh, there's something like sending Reiki. And I felt like, oh, this must be like music. There must be something in there, like sound waves and Reiki waves. And, well, it is. Yeah, it was my experience after second degree was like... Going into the space of sending Reiki was like opening up a universe inside of me. It felt like I could breathe better. I would have more space within my body. And, yes, it was an expansion in a different way. It was not feeling bigger in an ego way. Like, oh, now I'm this big person. It felt spacious in a most loving way. And so I love the way you say, Jürgen, giving other people space when we practice with them. I think it's a most beautiful picture. It's part of my, if I could call it cosmology, I would say it starts with one point, something, and there is space involved. A big space, yeah. A big, beautiful space.
Mm.
Yeah. Like now, I feel it between us. We kind of managed to enter the same space somehow. I can feel that with you. It's really big. Now... I said before, oh, I miss looking in your eyes. Right now, I love the space between us. somewhere between Holland and Frankfurt.
Right. Well, you know what I, what's, let's see. What's interesting for me is that this, we touched on this, earlier in our conversation about this paradox between human beings wanting to be individual and wanting to be, and I wonder if there isn't some innate understanding of our human, in our humanness, that understands that if we take our own space, like our own place, and give another person the space to have their own place, then this fight between individualism and knowing that we're a part of a species that is totally interconnected, that this is the balancing point, this gift of space.
Yes.
Did I? Yeah. Oh, so it's interesting. Thank you for pointing that out.
That's, yeah, I experienced that in Aikido practice and in Reiki practice.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's
very, very, very clearly.
Yeah, like, yeah, like sometimes when I'm afraid to take space, it is because I haven't opened the space for someone else at the same time. It's,
say this again, because it's really important and I'd like to get it.
Yeah, I also have the experience of being told that I have taken too much space. And so I have moved into also the feeling of, oh, I'm afraid to take space. Maybe it's too much, but it has something to do, like you say, with at the same time opening up the space for someone else, the person that you relate to. Giving that person space at the same time while you allow yourself to have space, it's so, that creates such a beautiful, space together. It's like I have a practical example, like when you touch fingertips with a person, with another, person, you can feel your own fingertip or you can feel the fingertip of the other person. You can switch between those two consciousness.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah, I feel my fingertip more. Yeah, thank you. Or you can say, oh, I feel your fingertip. Wow. And then there comes the moment when you actually feel, oh, I'm not sure what I'm feeling here right now, but it's one. Sometimes it's your fingertip. Sometimes it's mine. And sometimes it's just both.
Uh-huh.
And it's one space, and that space can be created with our eyes. It can be created with whole hands. It can be created with bodies, and it can be created over distance as well. And, like when we send Reiki, all of a sudden, it feels like the space is imploding. Yeah. We're becoming one with that person that we're sending Reiki to.
Right.
And so I absolutely agree with you that space is a very central experience in the practice. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So Peter, you said you had a couple of points, and I'm wondering if we've gone past them or if the other one is still hanging out to be articulated.
Well, the one point is just part of what we've just been talking about.
Ah, great.
Yeah, that's just, I remember I had so many times with Don in my house, or we traveled, yeah, so many times. So I really loved the personal presence and share the personal presence. And at the beginning of our relationship, I remember Don wasn't accessible very much. I called him and I couldn't reach him and I felt left alone.
Uh-huh.
And over the years, I learned through the practice, no, he's there. He is actually there. Yeah, he is. I learned to communicate with him over distance. Yeah, and to communicate with him, even not via phone, because it saves a lot of money.
Well, yeah. This is another kind of use of space, I guess. It's filling the space with something else. Well, you know, I always thought that I haven't gotten to this point in sending distant treatments, but I most always have good conversations with the people I'm treating. Nice. And then, of course, I must go to the phone and check it out. You know, is this really true?
Yeah.
Is this how they're feeling right now? And until I get to the point where I really trust the quality of the conversation, I won't have really trusted the space that has been filled between us. And I find that that's part of my own personal practice, is to continue to trust that part of the space enough that it's a genuine communication. Right?
Yes. That brings me to the one point that I still had, like, in my heart that I wanted to mention or to bring up. It is actually a space that Jürgen, you were pointing out earlier already. The kind of the polarities or the paradox between oneness and separateness. Many spiritualities or cosmologies carry an aspect of separateness within them, within their belief systems. Like there are cosmologies, for instance, like from India, where there are some semi-gods who created the world because the world is actually not quite okay. So the real gods didn't create the world. And what I find consistently happening in Reiki practice is that it holds the space for being absolutely whole on Earth, being the possibility that this Earth is actually a holy place in the sense of being whole. And that it is my consciousness that has to learn that that possibility exists and that I'm not giving up on this place. And so it's a teaching of abundance. It's a teaching of richness that Reiki energy, how can you say that, permeates, goes through everything and holds the possibility, despite all the pain that is currently in this world, all the suffering, holds this, that's our practice, holds the space for a complete healing.
Mm-hmm. Beautifully said.
And I feel the challenge in it. I know the moments where I don't trust that.
Right.
No, I feel the moments where within my body I feel pain or fear, and I think, "Oh, this is the reality." Yeah, and then I remind myself, and like I have this beautiful few words from Jule Irina van Kalka, who initiated me into first and second degree of Reiki, who sat there in the dojo and said, "You know what, you guys? I have a toothache and I'm fine." And she said, "Oh, I have a tummy ache and I'm fine." She pointed out the possibility that within a pain and a suffering, we still hold the possibility for healing and for being completely whole. And so that we don't have to move into the roles of life, the attitudes that we hold normally. We don't have to move into them 100%. Yeah, we can move into them 99% and hold 1% open.
Well, when I was working with my with my chemotherapy as a kind of spiritual opening.
Oh, yeah.
Which was really interesting, I have to say. Mm. I was really drawn to some chants by Deva Premal, who is a German woman, a sannyasin of Bhagwan Rajneesh, and she has, as you know, done these beautiful recordings of different chants. And in the early days, it was, these were chants came from India. And there's this one that says something like this. I can't remember exactly what the translation is, but it's, there is a whole, and when a piece of the whole is removed, the whole remains.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I just love this because after my surgery, even though it was just, percentage of my body that left me was very, very small, you know, maybe 2% or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I got that it was this, that my mind treated it as if it were much bigger and that I wasn't whole anymore. And so this chant just allowed this understanding to come into my cellular body, right? So I would do my yoga exercises and practice and always listen to this chant. And it made such a huge difference. So this piece that you're talking about being whole and finding wholeness in our lives, it isn't wholeness that's out there. It's wholeness that we already have.
Yeah.
And this, for me, is another expression of the Shinto understanding that everything is divine, everything is whole, and that even though we might be missing a part of our physical body, or we might not have a part of our mental stability, or we might question the existence of God as a part of our spiritual angst, we still are whole. And it's an amazing concept because I don't know where we got this, but I feel like many of us human beings feel like we need to be perfect. And perfection is having all the body parts, you know, having everything together, having no problems. I mean, where did we get this idea? I don't know. But, but in nature, you know, there are these ecosystems, whole ecosystems, within an ecosystem, within an ecosystem, within an ecosystem, and each one of them are considered whole, even though maybe one side of a tree has totally split off because of lightning. It's still a whole. It's still providing the service that the whole tree did, you know, when it was there. And just interesting things that come up in me when you were talking about Eula's, you know, line of wisdom, which I totally agree with because I still live with cancer in my life. And I in February, I just got that I was healthy and that there was this healthy part of me that wanted to just be healthy. And so I have this like 2% of my body that's not what we might call perfect. But it's whole somehow. It is included, this lesion that I have is included in my wholeness. And it makes such a huge difference in how I, and my attitude toward my daily life.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. And I feel like Reiki really teaches us that in all these different ways when we practice.
Well, for me, when you talked about that, that ring to me, or that connected to me to the one thing we talked about earlier, that you know, or what I said, that Reiki is always there. So for me, oneness is always there. And what Reiki teaches us, or this energy teaches us, that it's always there. So for me, it's, you know, related, that because I don't always have the feeling that I give people something when I teach them Reiki. It's more that I discover with them.
Right.
And so oneness or wholeness is one aspect, or maybe is it? Yeah.
Yes, I very much relate to you, Jürgen, because sometimes people think that initiations are like energy injections, mm-hmm. something like that. And then I always say, well, no, I think I just remind you of yourself. Yeah? I remind you of the potential inside of yourself, and then the energy flows. It's actually a very humble practice in a
mm-hmm.
way.
Mm-hmm.
It's more non-doing than doing. It's more being and allowing the student, or yeah, I wonder even if student in this way is the right word. Allowing the other person, the other human being, just to experience what they need to experience at the moment. I agree with you.
Well, and master and student only in the way that I have more experience, usually. Yeah.
Or sometimes not.
Yeah, sometimes even not that. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel somebody stands in front of me and I just have to bow in front of him or her and say, thank you. Yeah. I had a friend coming over to me two days ago. He just visited me and we went for a walk in the park, and he practices Reiki and I practices Reiki, and I think he was a true master for me at that moment. What he told me about relationships, what he experienced at the moment. And he, yeah, I just felt, yes, thank you. Thank you for your being. And, which brings me to an aspect, Phyllis, of being whole, even when something is missing, is an aspect of community, a community aspect. Like if the possibility within the community to see that I am playing a part and someone else shares his or her gifts to the community. And it has the possibility for myself to get away from this aspect of needing to be perfect or needing to give this or that, and just allowing myself to be and allowing another person to fill in what I don't have. And so between the two of us, one and one becomes three in a way. And if a community can build that, this is one of my visions, that could happen more also within a Reiki community, that we can lift each other this way and see what every one of us has to bring as a gift.
Again, beautifully said, and something that is very difficult to do. Because,
yes.
You know, we all, I mean, I'll just speak for myself. I have this need sometimes to be useful, and somehow the weird thing about useful is that it seems to be like I need to be uniquely useful.
Yes.
Which is really tough because, you know, we're unique, but, you know, do we really come up with always unique ideas? I don't think so.
I believe that most of what I think is unique, many, many other people have said before me and have lived before me. And, And I'm more and more like this aspect, because then it creates a field of wisdom that other people have done the same thing. And it's, I don't go home with a merit of something. And actually Jürgen and I, we share a space where this is happening a lot, all the time. It is the Reiki Festival in fall, the Gersfeld Festival.
Uh-huh.
And Jürgen has been in the first team. I mean, he's been a founding part of this festival.
Definitely.
And I'm currently in the festival team since 4 years. And actually Jürgen encouraged me many years ago, hey, Peter, come and be part of this. And what I experienced in the last years is, wow, there is unity, there is conflict. And as being part of a team, one has to let go of this ambition to just produce the same old stuff that I always produce, the same things that I want to be seen, that I want to be heard. It's in the context of the festival. It is, the community is in the center, and I have to learn to serve. And in the team, when we're in conflict, we decided that we go through these conflicts and we live with them, but we make sure that in October, by the time the festival starts, we are there for the community and that we have a wonderful experience together. And that we can handle the conflicts that we had, that we can handle them, and that we can grow with those conflicts. And it has happened every year, and we have been growing every year. It's a miracle. It must be mystic order in a way. Jürgen, would you agree?
I totally agree.
It's a mystic experience in a way, because sometimes you think, oh my God, I don't want to talk to this person ever again.
Right.
And if she or he comes to the festival, it's going to be so irritating. And in the end, it just all doesn't matter. For some reason, it doesn't matter. There is some healing happening just by itself if you open up to it. And I think it's, because this festival has such a tradition, it's 20 years old. It carries an energy that you can build with. And so maybe it's partially this. Jürgen, I don't know. I don't know what you would say to this. It's just my impressions are, I have so many impressions of that, and I'm very thankful for the learning experience and the learning field.
I have to say that I'm happy that I'm not the organizer anymore. Because it gives me the opportunity to have a different view on it. And, being with the team who organizes it and having an outside view, I just can support what you just said, that that there's an healing energy or a whole energy or whatever who carries it. Yeah. Sometimes if there's a conflict and I see it, I have no idea. I don't have an opinion on my side. Oh. I just trust the process. And then that's my role. Actually, sometimes if this is not happening, I go there and say, well, I don't know the outcome, but we need to talk, or we need to send Reiki or whatever, we need to do something just to continue it. And it's actually very nice to see this happening, and very fulfilling. Yeah. Mm.
Well, I'm totally impressed with your description, Peter, of this process, because I was not involved. I was a very interested bystander in a lot of the organizational committee meetings for the festival in early years. Mm. And the power of being able to give space to dissonance and difference it shows that you can move to the next level of being And how to get there is to hold the space for everything, including difference.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Powerful teaching. Amazing. And I just think about all the time that we spend trying to agree with each other. How much energy that takes when, in fact, it may be one of those elusive, perfect ideas that somebody has had that isn't actually possible.
Mm-hmm.
And a marketing person who I really, really enjoy, he said to me one day when I was trying to work out wording and stuff like that, he said, "Phyllis, don't let perfection get in the way of greatness." And I should actually have this as a saying on my computer. Yeah. I mean, it's so beautiful and it just fits right in here. And I love the story of the Reiki Festival. That's great. And I hope to be able to come to it at some point soon.
That would be wonderful. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
The time will come when everything comes together.
Yes. 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 It was great meeting you again after many years in Gersfeld this year at the Pro Reiki meeting and spending some time with you and reconnecting and seeing your sparkling eyes. Yes.
Great. Good. Well, you know, the Gersfeld Festival is, has a sister, what I would call sister, sorry, but a companion, gathering, and that's the one that's in Oregon Mountains, at Brighton Bush Hot Springs. They have just celebrated their 30th year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that is impressive about them is that, you know, the old guard masters that were masters like in the 1980s and 90s, they ended up needing to give way to students and younger masters who were willing to take on the responsibility of holding this gathering. And in the last, I don't know, maybe 10 years or so, they have surrendered to their call to Reiki. And the way that they handle it is that they don't have to be masters to be on the board, I don't think. Well, I know so because there are some second degree students who are there. But they, whenever a decision is made, what they do first is they sit and they send Reiki to themselves or to the question. And mm-hmm. then they all sit around and in their own voices share what came up for them in the treatment. And mm-hmm. out of that is where they decide what direction to go in. And I find that so mm-hmm. amazing. Like that is like really using Reiki to guide community, and it's I think very inspiring because although I think many of us know that that's a possibility, we don't often actually use it.
Oh yes, I absolutely agree. It's like I find myself not talking with people but talking at people.
Uh-huh.
It's like there comes an idea or something and you start talking. But actually, it's so important to first establish a connection.
Uh-huh.
To first establish the space, to establish the energy and feel into it the other person. And I wish even in a conflict situation that I could do it more. You know, instead of being self-defensive and to first listen and get a feeling for the other person. And that for me is deep Reiki practice in a way to feel the energy between us and to send Reiki and to fill the space.
Right.
And then to bring across maybe what I want to say. Maybe right. At a certain point it's not even necessary anymore.
Right.
No, there's, I have a short story from a person that I really like. His name is Arnie Mindel, and he was asked to mediate between two aborigines in Australia. So he sat down at the fire with them, and they asked him, please do a mediation between us. So they sat down, and after half an hour of not talking, they both jumped up and thanked him and hugged him and said, you've been great. Yeah, you've done a wonderful thing for us. And they just sat in silence for half an hour, and they solved the problem.
Wonderful. That yes. is really very inspirational. Thank you.
Yes, it's still very inspirational for me.
Oh, that's great. Wonderful. Yes. Wonderful. Well, dear fellows, we're nearing the end of our second hour, and it seems like we're just coming to a close of the conversation naturally, which is beautiful. And so I just wanted to give you two an opportunity to say anything that you have to say now, and then we'll close this part of the show.
Well, I have to say I found this very inspiring, and I think it will just go with me thinking about that Reiki is giving space.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's so we'll see where I give space.
Right.
Reiki space in my life, like that.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I feel I love the space between us here that we created, and our connection, our heart connection. I think, Jürgen, it was a great idea to do this with us together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the only thing that I feel in my heart now, what I would like to say is there are so many different people out there, so many different Reiki practitioners, Reiki masters, and even Gersfeld now, the festival, is such a place which it holds so much diversity. If we can look at each other, feel each other, and see each other's hearts and connect and look beyond our differences, respect our differences, and just learn to love each other the way we are, then what can I say? Then I would be even happier than I am now. Because I'm a very happy person right now.
Right. Well, I believe that this practice, Reiki, whatever form it takes, actually has a living potential, meaning we're already living our potential.
Mm.
Has the living potential to really contribute to our human society in unique and in a beautiful way. And what it takes from us is to do it within our Reiki community, where we feel safe enough that we know that we have Reiki in common and discover that we have many other things in common and that we can carry that out and know that in the world that's not Reiki, if we want to make that separation, that we can actually have profound similarity and connection with everybody on the planet. And once we get that, once we really own that individually and as a Reiki community as a whole, then our whole will influence the other whole, and we will become one. And I think that is a fabulous direction to go in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. Great. Great.
Yeah.
So thank you both very, very much. It's been incredible for me too. And listeners, what a treat. And I don't know how I'm going to actually follow this up, but I hope to have a brilliant idea soon. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.